Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we established this is Vader, right? It's Vader time? Yeah, of course. 15-minute mark on The Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Also, I would like to tell you right now, it's very sunny. It's beautiful out right now. And, well, you can at least thank the Myers Law Group for telling you about that. That's who brought you fan weather, Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Mark Cabali. Jumping in for Zoom with Kaboom today. What do you got, youth baseball to drive your kid to? Yeah, Zoom with Kaboom. Very catchy, yes. Isn't it?
How about that? It almost rhymes.
It does rhyme. Zoom with Kaboom absolutely rhymes. Is Vader the best big man in wrestling history? Super heavyweight?
Probably not, no. Wouldn't that be Yokozuna?
I'm asking you, do you think Vader was better in the ring than Yoko? He was not as heavy as Yoko, but...
No, everything you ever hear anybody talk about is Yoko was... 500 pounds, but was moving like a 200-pounder out there. Vader was just a very stiff wrestler, which you hear from the folks, which means he'd
actually hit people.
Yes.
He'd potato people.
Which is fine at some points.
The Mark Cabali Report brought to you by IC Light. Kaboom, let's start with this, just a broadly kind of phrased question here. Steelers are 3-1, and the division around them is going like full dumb and dumber. Their pets' heads are falling off. The Ravens have injuries aplenty on defense. Some of them, one of them, Justin Matabuke, season ending. Lamar Jackson's hamstring looks dodgy. John Harbaugh won't even talk about it. Could you have possibly envisioned a better start for the Steelers than 3-1 and then the chaos that's happening around them right now?
No, I mean, it's a perfect scenario right now. I don't even know where to go at with that, Chris, of what would be more surprising at this point. 3-1 is somewhat surprising. If you're betting at the beginning of the season, you would say the best case scenario would have probably been 2-2, maybe 3-1, but more like 2-2, considering there are so many question marks. But the whole division just imploding, like you said, not only losing, but losing key players in that process. I mean, we're not just talking about average people. We're talking about Joe Burrow here. I mean, that's the only guy that made Cincinnati in a potential playoff team. Lamar Jackson, obviously, he's an MVP mm-hmm. of the league multiple times. So just a disaster that accompanies the Steelers' good start. Plus, you have two very winnable games coming up, right? Right after a bye against divisional opponents. I mean, before you know it, you're 5-1. And if you're 5-1, you're pretty much will be in it until late December, even if things fall apart. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a better scenario than what they are in right now.
So I've laid this out there to Pony. We've debated it. I mean, he kind of took it and ran with it as well earlier in the week. Harbaugh's not really talking much about that injury. They're trying to play it pretty coy, and you keep getting these reports that Jackson didn't practice. Let's just say, for argument's sake, he doesn't seem like he's going to play. I'd be stunned if he did play. I think he's been officially maybe ruled out against Houston. And then he doesn't play against the Rams, too. Now, I know the Rams faced a backup quarterback and managed to punt on yesterday winning the game, but that's still a pretty good team, in my opinion. If this gets to the point where the Steelers handle their business post-bye week and have the Browns and have the Bengals and they win both those games, And then the Ravens go 0-2 in their next two, and it's 1-5 and 5-1, and Baltimore's licking its wounds heading into their bye. What kind of chances would you give the Steelers with a four-game lead on, at least on paper, their best competitor to win this division?
Yeah, it all depends on if how healthy Baltimore would get. Say if they were nearly 100% healthy, and I mean mostly with Lamar Jackson coming back after that time, I'm not ready here to write those guys off quite yet. They are still a very talented team that has been shown in the past that they play some of their better ball down the stretch. Plus, they're, you know, in theory, their schedule lightens up a little bit in the back half compared to the Steelers playing some of their tougher games right there. So I'm not quite ready to say that they're absolutely done. But if you're 5-1 compared to 1-5, I mean, that's a little bit more of a steep hill to climb than last year. And last year was a pretty steep hill to climb in December for Baltimore. They needed to be perfect, and the Steelers had to be the opposite of perfect, and that's what happened. So, I don't know. So in some weird way, I still am a believer of Harbaugh, which means maybe this injury to Lamar Jackson gets them back on track, and you know what I'm talking about. They're actually handing the ball to the person that makes the difference in their offense. Maybe they're forced to do that now, and that just picks up when Lamar comes back. So I'm not ready to write them off yet, but if they go 5-1, 1-5, it's, you know, the old fat ladies warming up in the old alcoves, right?
Ooh, very nice term, the alcoves. That's why we have him on, Mark Caballi, Pat McAfee Show, Steelers Insider, joining us as he always does on Football Fridays. Even though the Steelers aren't playing this week, they get to rest up and get healthy. I got a bunch of different subjects. I already warned you via text that we were going to do some quarter season awards later on in our chat here, Mark, but I think there are plenty of intriguing discussions to be had, even though things are largely hunky-dory in Steelers world, at least record-wise. First one is this. And Pony and I got into like a knockdown drag-out about this. It was process versus results. It does make me a little bit psycho to watch Mike Tomlin when the entire narrative going into that Dublin game is he's the inferior defensive coordinator of the two guys actually calling the defenses in this game. He's also going to get clowned by the other team's head coach who calls their offense because he's so good at it. Mike goes in there with a great defensive plan to force turnovers, cause havoc. He also participates in putting together an offensive plan that goes big personnel and does the one thing that the Vikings aren't good at stopping, which is just line up and beat you physically and run it right at you. They are playing a dominant game for about 53 minutes. And then I swear to God, it's like the guy just turned off his brain and said, you know what? I'm going to do all the things people hate and see if it's enough to lose this football game. Like, how do you evaluate a performance like that where he was so good for so much of that game and then things got very dodgy at the end?
Yeah, it wasn't ideal how the final 7 minutes ended in that game. But you do have to keep it in perspective. They did, I don't think when he was calling defensive plays with 5 minutes left, was assuming there was going to be a 75-yard throw to Jordan Addison. So some of these times, the players are going to have to step up and make plays. Now, is that his fault? Potentially his fault? You cannot allow, I mean, for any reason whatsoever, allow that to happen, that point in the game, to be able to allow a big chunk play like that to be able to get back into a game. I honestly like them going for it on the fourth and goal at the four.
So did I. I thought that was the yeah, right move to go for it there at bare minimum.
Yeah, I like the fact, but the thing is, was it even his idea? Because it sounded like,
well, no, he had to
like
get cajoled into it by Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, which is fine. But then where does it go from there? Does it then he put his stamp on it and say run the ball? Because it makes no zero sense whatsoever to throw run the ball on fourth and goal at the 4 yard line. I mean, if you look at a fourth and goal plays over an entire season, that might be the only time a ball is ran, right? You have to throw the ball in that position because you're not, first of all, he does not throw red zone interceptions. You have to trust that Rodgers are going to make the big right decision, and you're going to try to score to win the game. So does Mike Tomlin chime in and say to Arthur Smith, run the ball, or Aaron Rodgers, run the ball? I mean, we don't know that right now, but those last 5 minutes do leave a little – left it open for interpretation, maybe?
Well, it left a lot to be desired. It left a lot to be desired. Here's what bothers me the most.
Bad taste in your mouth, right? A bad taste.
It did. I mean, that's what I said to Pony. It was like going out to a restaurant where you have a great entree, great appetizer. You have everything leading up to dessert is awesome. And then the dessert like makes you sick and it doesn't taste good and you get like a stomach bug from it. And then you say, yeah, the meal was pretty good, but all I'll think about is getting sick on the way home because of this bad dessert. And here's the thing with the end of that game and the way it played out that really bugged me. He calls for the run on fourth and goal. And there are some people, like the math community says, that's not as bad of a call as people think, because especially it'll take the defense off guard and you've had such a good job. You've done such a good job getting yardage. I disagree with them. But because that call failed, Mark, I feel like the real Tomlin stamp was on fourth and one with about 18 inches to actually get. And you have been running it very well, and you have a tight end who you could line up under center and say, fall forward, Darnell. Not only does he not go for it, he punts, and to hear Danny Smith tell it, it almost sounds like they told Corliss Waitman to bomb it into the end zone.
Yes.
Because they were worried about a return. Would you just said that might be the only fourth and goal from the four play where a team runs all year, okay?
Yeah.
What percentage of punts kicked from the plus side of the 50 do you think even get returned in any NFL season?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm serious.
But, you know, that might be just the easy way of putting it. I mean, what's the worst case scenario there? A block punt, right?
But you're still punting it. Like, even if you're bombing it into the end zone, there's the same risk there for a block punt, whether you're coughing corner or hitting it out of the end zone.
What I was under the understanding of, it was going to be how the defense set up. If they were coming for the block punt, they were going to just try to down it, get rid of it, down it inside the 5-10 yard line. If they had a returner back, he was going to kick it as far as he can humanly possibly can. And that's exactly what they did. He wasn't interested in any return, put the ball at the 20, and let's go win it from there. What was their minute or so left? I can't even remember.
But he only gained he gained 19 yards of field position, other than the delay of game, which pushed it five back. So he kicked from the 45 or 46 or whatever. But like, if they put a returner back, Mark, I guess this is where I think, like, Mike has been around forever. I try to give him the benefit of the doubt that I think he's a pretty sharp guy who might make bad decisions, but he's not like a dumb coach or anything. You can have a returner back there and tell Corliss Waitman, hey, buddy, in no uncertain terms is this ball to land inbounds. We don't want it in the end zone. Kick the ball diagonally, and if the official misjudges where it went out and runs it up to the 13-yard line, okay, so be it. But do not kick it into the end zone, at least. I don't know.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate right there. Just say for sake of argument, they get that punt blocked, and then they end up scoring and whatnot. Or are we sitting here today saying, why didn't he just kick it 30 yards out of the end zone? I don't really care. Just get rid of it. Results might dictate on what we were thinking right then. Because I think by far the worst case scenario would have been a block punt at that time. And they wanted to do anything possible not to.
I know. I don't really understand how, like, one type of punt versus another takes the blocked punt out of the equation. Like, if anything, to me, going for it is the high likelihood play that you can get 18 inches of real estate. Mike has also been on record saying if you can't get a yard, you don't deserve to win, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. They can't block that punt because there is no punt. You just go for it and keep it in your offense's hands.
But I mean, on the flip side, aren't you a little bit excited about what you saw from Arthur Smith and what you saw?
Well, I am. Well, that
with Terrell Austin. I mean, Arthur Smith, they came up with that plan early because I thought they might have switched that when Jaylen Warren came out and Gainwell came in, but apparently that was the plan altogether and they had no answer for it whatsoever. So at least we know Arthur Smith can devise or read a defense to say this is where their weak spot is. And so
that's true.
There has to be a positive side to that.
Well, I want to get into that more next. I want to get the Tomlin stuff out of the way. I already got asked by Rob Dog on Twitter. Mark asked me, would you rather Tomlin have done what Sean McVay did and lost the game like McVay did last night by going for it? You know what? The answer, Rob, yes. Process over results, baby. He went for it. He went for the kill shot. I love it. He still might have died with his boots off if he had kicked a field goal there and the Niners had marched it right back down the field. So, yes, as a matter of fact, I would have preferred better process.
He disagrees with you. But McVay disagrees with you on his own decision. He said it's the worst decision he's ever made.
Well, yeah, because it didn't work. That doesn't mean that the decision was wrong in terms of the process that got him there. All right, coming up, we're going to talk more with Mark Caballi. Zoom with Kaboom here. There's a lot more to get into. That offensive line had its best game. He just mentioned it. Arthur Smith had the big personnel, and the Steelers ran it on a very good defense. There is a lot to like. There really is. Coming out of that Vikings win and heading into the bye week, we will dive into all of that with Mark Caballi as we roll on. Fan text line is 412-928-9370. It's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. More Zoom with Kaboom. First, here's Charlie Borges with a fan headline.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this music belongs to the excellence of execution, except when he was actually trying to cut a compelling, interesting promo. Fan Twitter, 93.7 The Fan, is brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Charlie Borges didn't think Bret Hart was going to catch a stray on today's show, but here we are. Remember he put the glasses on the little kid? And then he did that at WrestleMania 13, and then made Austin pass out in a pool of his own blood and immediately turned heel. That was fun.
The double turn.
That was the best. That, to me, is the best match in wrestling history. That is the most influential and important and best match in wrestling history. Double turn created a superstar. Anyway. Wow. I know. We're not getting down this road because between Borges and you, Caballi, I'm going to get a bunch of people going, you know, WrestleWar 1989, Steamboat and Flair was really good too. And then it's going to nerd out. All of our listeners are going to go, what the hell are you talking about? So we're going to stick to the plan here. I will tell you this, 93.7 The Fan will showcase a different community each Saturday through the Youth Football Showcase with a special visit from members of the fan staff. If you want 93.7 The Fan to visit your game, then email youthsports@937thefan.com with your group name, your group's main contact information, and potential dates. Details, 93.7thefan.com, brought to you by Steel City Shredding, Saloni's Italian Bread, Pelman Electric, and Keystone Custom Apparel. There are, Mark. I mean, I maybe went to the extreme in saying I wish Mike Tomlin had made the right mathematical call and lost like Sean McVay did, and then Sean McVay second-guessed himself, but neither here nor there. The Steelers are 3-1. Tomlin made a decision I didn't like, but it didn't matter because the Vikings never really got close to field goal range on that final drive. And I think the big story that most people, I would imagine, came out of that game feeling good about is the fact that the Steelers ran the ball almost at will, I would say, all game, and did it very strategically. Like, I think if you're looking for bright spots and reason for continued optimism, the play of that line and just their big personnel packages would be right there at the top of the list.
Yeah, and let's not kid ourselves here. We're giving Kenny Gainwell a lot of credit here, and I don't want to sit here and poo-poo on his parade, but for the first time in a while, that offensive line was moving people. They were pushing people out of the way. And I think that pretty much shows that if you have a dominant, not even a dominant offensive line, the one that can get movement, that pretty much anybody could run. I would like to see what Jaylen Warren would have been able to do under those same circumstances. While we're throwing, you know, tons of roses at Kenny Gainwell, like I said, that's a tough position to put him in, who he's never been in his career. For the first time, it really, really looks like there's a little bit of cohesion on that offensive line. Was it because of the Spencer Henderson, Connor Hayward,
Darnell Washington
trio? It could be. It's not something you can live on. You can't live on those heavy packages like that. Those are scheme-specific, team-specific. But I do like that offensive line has continued to get incrementally better. I mean, Broderick Jones went from terrible to decent to terrible to decent. He just needs to stack a couple.
He needs to stop the yo-yo performances. Together. Yeah, I thought he was pretty solid. I think it helps when he's got other big people moving people. Listen, man, you said it. Don't maybe fall all over yourself giving Kenneth Gainwell his flowers. I would, just for me, and I wonder if people agree with this. I would imagine they do. I'd much rather be praising an offensive line as being the reason for that, because line play to me is what makes almost every running back. Like, I'm fine if Kenneth Gainwell gets less credit because people want to send more of it in the direction of the O-line. I also do think, to go back to what you said before the break about Arthur Smith, that struck me as pretty meaningful that he was able to devise a game plan that did all of that and still found time or ways to get DK Metcalf the ball in meaningful spots and hit a couple of those shot plays that make the running game more effective.
Yeah. See, I think we pretty much saw a microcosm of how they wanted to play. You know, they want to be able to run the ball. Don't allow a lot of shots down the field, but allow ones where Metcalf can catch and run the ball, play defense, play solid defense, get after the quarterback, all those type of things. I think that's how they definitely want to play, but they just haven't been able to put that together yet so far. So, I just BSing with Arthur Smith on the side, man. He was, I wouldn't say pretty proud of himself, but he was feeling good because he came up with a plan and they stuck with it, and he knew that they had no answer for it. And Chris, this is four straight defensive lines now that they've played that are very tough. So it's nice.
It ain't going to get any easier after the bye week because Cleveland's is probably the best of the bunch so far.
Yeah, but
that's the best rushing defense in the league, Mark. I'm not making it up. And they're the best total defense.
Yeah, I understand,
in the league.
But at least Detroit showed a couple kinks in that armor the other day.
I don't know how much we're talking about being optimistic about the O-line. I don't know how much Detroit does or what Detroit does is analogous to the Steelers, because I think that's probably the best offensive line in football, moving people who don't want to be moved. When you look at you mentioned like they want to, you know, hit Metcalf occasionally, but they want to control the line of scrimmage. They want to, you know, win with defense running and timely passing. Couple different things come to mind there, Kaboom. And the first is, where the hell does this leave Pat Freiermuth right now? 10 targets on the entire season, 7 catches for 65 yards, and almost a forgotten man as far as snap counts were concerned in that Vikings game.
Yeah. Hey, and John, who didn't really play that much. What were they, 18, 20% of the snaps? Not very much. But once again, that's game plan specific right there. Obviously, you're not going to play that every single game. So there's going to be times where he's going to have to be called on. But, I mean, overall, though.
Do you think that there's any discontent, though? I mean, Pat signed a big contract, so he's got paid. But I know fans, and I think a lot of people are predisposed to want to like Pat. He went to Penn State, et cetera. Like, he's a good dude. Oh, yeah. But fans are starting to get pretty restless with the guy is, A, not a big part of the offense, and B, when he gets a chance to make a huge play on a free play for Rodgers where there's defensive holding, the ball goes right through the wickets on about a 60-yard ball on the move on the rope from a 40-year-old guy or 41-year-old guy.
Yeah, he probably doesn't miss that ball very much. I mean, he has very solid hands, but there's only so much. I mean, you really can't criticize him at all for the Vikings games because he just wasn't a part of what they wanted to do offensively in that game. Maybe if Calvin Austin's out for a week or two, he's be able to jump in there and pick up some of that slack whatsoever. Only thing that's been missing, I do think, from this offense has been, you know, the best tight end room I've ever seen, quoting Aaron Rodgers, have not really done really much offensively. I mean,
but is that by design? Biggest, like, what's the explanation?
I think so far it has been. I mean, I was under the impression just them how they talk and how they were going about their business and some of the plays you saw that they were going to use these formations with these guys to create some crazy matchups, and it just hasn't been there yet. Either they don't think it's going to work against certain teams, or they got away from it. But I wouldn't be worried about Pat. I don't think Pat's – I'm sure he wishes he can contribute a lot more, but I would be willing to wait more than four games here than to criticize him for not being part of the game plan. I mean, Jonnu Smith makes just as much money of him, and he wasn't part of this game plan whatsoever. But that's a position I do think moving forward they need to not force it to, but get the ball to those guys, at least Jonnu and Freiermuth a little bit more.
Okay, lastly then, when it comes to the passing game, how do we feel about A, how long Calvin Austin's going to be out, and B, what, if anything, they plan on doing as far as players, you know, player acquisition outside of their actual roster to replace him?
I didn't see him the past couple of days. He was, well, they didn't even practice. They were only there once. They were only there Tuesday. But he probably will miss this upcoming week here against the Browns, maybe even the week after that, because it's such a quick turnaround. We don't know that yet, but I'm just speculating if he does that. That will bring you right up darn close, a week or so away from the trade deadline. That's where you would have to really make your decision if you really want to go all in to try to improve the depth of that position. And I think that's going to be based off of what we see over these games that he's not in there. Austin's not in there. Is Roman Wilson legit? They still talking a big game with Roman Wilson. They love what he was able to do, yet when it came down to crunch time, they decided to go with Skoranek and Scotty Miller.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of talked a big game about how much they believe in Roman Wilson, because talk starts to get pretty cheap and actions speak a whole lot louder than words.
Yeah, I think a lot of it would have to do with having a full week of practice for a guy that's really only played a handful of snaps over his career. That's why they probably felt more comfortable with the Scotty Miller Skoranek going in at that time than going with Roman Wilson. But if Wilson has, well, they'll practice four times next week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. If he has a full week's of work, I would imagine he would be that wide receiver too. And if he is that wide receiver too, he better make some plays, because if not, then you're going to hit that trade deadline where you might have to go. I'm just throwing, just because Crowley likes to pat himself on the back, you have to go calling to New Orleans and say if Olave's around. You know, I think you have to make that move. Not an A.J. Brown, a Highsmith stuff that I keep hearing, which is absolutely insane to me. But somebody to at least provide a little bit more punch at that position, if Austin's out too.
Kaboom, coming up. We're going to do awards, the Kaboomies. We are going to have you.
From Zoomies.
Yes, the Zoomies, yes. Well, Zoomies is a thing dogs get, I think.
Well, the Kaboomies on the Zoomies.
They're better than the Razzies, that's for sure. We're going to do our quarter year awards, because we're roughly a quarter year through this Steelers season. I have given you many, I think six total categories, and so we will go through all of those, and we will hand out the Kaboomies for the Steelers at the quarter mark of their season coming up next. First, I will tell you that Mr. Kaboom here is appearing on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Excuse me. Here's a Charlie Borges headline.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mark, what's the best Mr. Perfect match? Is it SummerSlam 91 against Bret Hart when his back was half broken and he still pretty much delivered a four-star classic?
Forget about that. I was just watching the Jim Johnston documentary of how he created music.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and I think he listed his top 25, and Mr. Perfect was like number four.
Of his favorite themes he did?
Oh, he did, yes.
What was his favorite one?
Might have been
didn't he
DX,
do
X maybe.
Didn't he do Austin?
Might have been. Yeah, it might have been DX. I can't remember now who number one was. Shawn Michaels was up there. Shawn Michaels was talking about how terrible he sang it, but somehow when they
when Sensational Sherry sang it, it didn't sound. It wasn't as like weirdly catchy.
I'm not your boy toy.
Yeah, I mean. That one, I don't even remember it when Sensational Sherry sang it. By the way, the YouTube algorithm feeds me all sorts of nonsense when I'm just like zoning out and like relaxing before bed, all like wrestling stupid stuff. You know, I was watching, they did like a 1996 return match from the King of the Ring final, Jake the Snake, when they were doing a very tasteless alcohol angle with Jerry Lawler, and he's fighting Stone Cold, and he looks like he's about to get the pin, and then Lawler spits like whiskey at him. And Austin Austin pins him. I think it was, I don't even know if it was a pay-per-view. Austin just pins him off of the stunner real quick right after that. I think this is not an original thought because I feel like I've seen people write long-form articles about this. The stunner, nowhere near as fun of a move if you don't have the kick to the gut beforehand to set it up and prime the audience that it's about to happen. When he would just sneak up on somebody and hit the move, it's like, all right, whatever. As soon as it became kick to the gut and then this like absurd, oversold, insane move, then it got popular. But like, it's weird to watch him do the move and like people know it's his finisher, but nobody gets all that fired up for it.
Yeah. Okay, this is an easy answer. The person who took the worst stunner.
Linda McMahon or Trump.
I think it was Vince. Vince was awful.
Vince at the last WrestleMania that he was at.
Oh, no. If we're talking about Vince when he was like in his mid-70s, maybe. Yes, he took a horrible one. They like kind of not bumped into each other. As far as No. When everyone was in their...
He couldn't get his hands around him.
Yeah, when everyone was in their semi-physical primes or like not in their 70s, Trump took a very bad one at WrestleMania. Like he's not a wrestler, though, or even like a side character, so he wouldn't know how... When they would try to get Linda McMahon with one, she had no idea. He just kind of bumped into her and she fell over. I always thought Shane did a good one, though, because he would do the spit take in midair after he would always have a beer in his mouth, and then he would hit him with it, and then Shane would bounce up and go.
I think Razor Ramon had a good one, right? I think McAfee's one at WrestleMania was good about 5 years
His was pretty good. The Rock would oversell it. He'd bounce all over the ring like he got like he got shocked with a cattle prod too. Anyway, we could go down these rabbit holes, and maybe I should because Pony's not here to go, guys, what are we doing? But we have awards to give out, Mark. We have the Kaboomies. First and second annual, first and only annual Kaboomies.
Yeah, I might have to steal this idea. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you can. You can call it Kaboom on Zoom, too, if you want. I mean, the Zoom Kaboom, whatever you want. I mean, I was feeling very creative today. All right, so quarter poll of the season, roughly speaking. It's 17 games. This is as close as we get. Give me your Steelers MVP of the quarter season and a little explanation why.
None other than the 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers. 8 touchdowns. Was he third in the league? Was he close to 70%? Completion percentage, 3 picks. I don't think anybody in their wildest dreams thought that they were going to be able to get that kind of production out of him so far. And his accuracy still there, his arm strength still there. Maybe his feet aren't there. Maybe his escapability's not there, but I don't know where this team would be at right now without him, even though it's coming from a huge Mason Rudolph guy. So I think he's just the overall MVP. I don't honestly think there's anybody close.
So you and I are one for one on agreement on these. Let's see if you did the same thing for largely the same reasons. I think you can chalk up two wins specifically to him being their quarterback. Yeah. I don't think they win the Jets game without him, and I don't think that a lesser quarterback finds a way to get one touchdown when they need it against New England. So I'm with you there. Offensive player of the quarter year. Now, I'll just tell you full disclosure, I did not double up on Rodgers because it's just like the offensive player of the year award. It typically goes to the best non-quarterback offensive player.
That's a tough one there because Metcalf had the good game against the Vikings, but he really didn't do much prior to that. None of the tight ends, none of the offensive linemen. Wow. I guess by default, if you're not picking Aaron Rodgers, it would have to be Metcalf just for the fact that that last game really put him over the edge, but that's up for debate.
I think he's been very good in getting like limited targets and limited reps. He's been efficient with what he's actually been given, is my opinion on this one, Mark. Because he's been targeted 22 times. He's got 15 catches for 261 and three touchdowns. It hasn't been like earth-shattering, but I also think he's made the most, generally speaking, of what they've given him.
Yeah, plus I like the fact that he's not the Russell Wilson type of receiver where it's just moon ball and let's hopefully it falls in there. He makes his own plays. He catches, he runs over people, he runs nice routes. And at the goal line, what do? He ran somebody over right at the goal line the other day, which went pretty much unnoticed. So I think it gives him the ability to keep this success up because it's not because let's see how well the quarterback can throw it. It's how quick I can get it and how I can turn it into a big game.
I mean, I think he's scariest when he's catching passes over the middle in some space like the one he actually took to the house. I mean, you see him running, yeah. And it's like one of those high school games where you can see two kids both running and one of them is clearly faster. To use a Terrell Pryor example.
What is he, 6'4", 240? Yeah. He has to be 240. And nobody can catch him?
He looked on that touchdown when he's like pumping the arms too. He looked like the one bodybuilder in Happy Gilmore who's chasing after Shooter when he runs off with the gold jacket. He's wearing Zubaz pants and he's chugging his arms like that. I believe that belongs to Mr. Gilmore. Like he just looks like a tank running down the field. All right,
every time you say Zubaz pants, I think of John Fecko, but mind just
moving on. So we're two for two. I picked Metcalf as well. Defensive player of the quarter year for the Steelers.
Defensive player. I'm going to go outside the box here a little bit. I think it could be Watt. I think obviously it can be Watt. I'm going Patrick Queen. I really like how he's played the past couple of games and how he has improved substantially from last year. So I'm going Patrick Queen. I mean, if Deshaun Elliott played all four games, I think he would be maybe the runaway winner because I think he might be the low-key MVP of this defense. But I'm going to go Patrick Queen right now.
So I will say that while I did not have Patrick Queen winning on mine, so we finally have a dissenting view. I did look up his numbers and thought to myself, you know, like he hasn't been half bad. He tied for the team lead in tackles for loss. Like, I think his last 2.5 games probably have been a hell of a lot better, especially the last two, maybe really, than the first two. All right, rookie of the quarter year. There's only like what, three people you could even pick for this, right? Sawyer, obviously. Derek Harmon, and I'm not even thinking, Y.A. Black.
I'm going to go Jack Sawyer. I know he hasn't played a lot in the base, but the guy is by far the team leader in special teams tackles. And he's probably hasn't played much special teams at all in his career. I doubt if he played at Ohio State. I doubt if he even played in high school. So, that probably will change as you get to the halfway point and it's going to be more of a Harmon. But right now, just based on his ability to play special teams, I'm going to go with Jack Sawyer.
I went with Harmon. I thought Harmon was just a slam dunk with the way the whole defensive line has looked better since he came into the lineup. Biggest surprise of the quarter year. So this is obviously positive connotation.
We're talking about player, right?
Yeah, biggest. Player. These are all player answers. Biggest surprise in a good way of the quarter year.
Biggest surprise.
I texted these to you like 3 hours ago. You could have made a nice little list.
I changed my mind a little bit there. I would say, in general, I would go Kenny Gainwell. I mean, I think the run, the 100 and some or 99 yards put him over the top. But I think he was very valuable. He's getting the ball more than I was anticipating to be in straight run plays. I thought he was just going to be a third down back, a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield, a guy who can block, pick up blitzes. But he's been proven to be more than that to me. So I would throw him as a pleasant surprise.
I went with Nick Herbig, who feels like he, you know, he's winning.
Only played
I think he's
a game.
What's that?
He's only played two games.
He's leading the league in a stat I know you love, pass rush win rate, and he's also actually getting to the quarterback and making the plays too. So I think he's like a starter quality player, and they technically now have three of them when Highsmith's healthy at that position.
Yeah, when are teams going to start, you know, chipping him?
Herbig, I mean that's what I mean.
That point, right?
I thought he was good. I think he's been great when he's been out there, and so I think that's why he's my surprise. Biggest disappointment so far.
Biggest disappointment, Darius Slay, I think.
Wow. I went Freiermuth there, which seemed kind of obvious. Pony went Broderick Jones, which I didn't think was fair.
We were anticipating this, right? Slay, I thought Slay was going to come in and just be an absolute shutdown guy. Now, it might not be 100% his fault, whatever it is, but the stats say what they are. And by the way, did you happen to see Jalen Ramsey take a shot at Pro Football Focus today?
No, what did he say?
I know you guys are lying now. It was something about most yards after the catch or something, and he's like, I know you guys are lying now. Finally, after about a dozen years, people are finally catching on to this Pro Football Focus debacle.
I don't know, man. I'm sorry. I will always laugh. I don't always agree with their grades, but it is amazing to me how big the Venn diagram is of people who say it's the dumbest site ever, and then when they have like a very glowing review for a player on that person's favorite team, say, oh, look, Pro Football Focus gave him really high marks. Just a classic. If they're rating our guys well, everyone seems to like it. If they're not, well, then that's a problem.
But you have to start off with, you know, take it for what it's worth. You know, that's what you have to say. Then you name the PFF staff that benefits your team. Take it for what it's worth. But TJ Watt is blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, the grades are just ridiculous. You get rid of the grades and you're pretty much – I think a solid site. The grades I've never liked for past a decade. Whenever they start coming out, the grades are goofy.
I love them because there's something that we can talk about on this very radio show. Mark, I would give you about an 81.3 PFF grade for your performance today. That is Pro Bowl, if not borderline All-Pro caliber level. Thank you.
That's All-Pro? All-Pro?
Yeah, I think if you're like a consistent 81, you're like a second-team All-Pro type of guy.
It's, you know, I tell you what, I wish I graduated high school with an 81.
Somehow I'm not surprised to hear that from you. All right, Kaboom. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you.
Zoom with Kaboom right there. I've coined a new feature on this show, or just a new name for a thing we do every single week. All right, coming up, the Steelers have hit the quarter pole. They are in way better shape than I think most people expected, both themselves as a team and the division around them. How much have your expectations changed about this team moving forward, if at all? Chime in right now. Get ready to go here. 412-928-9370. We got a quick commercial break, long commercial-free segment on the other side. We'll hear from some of you. Steelers in very good position, four games into the season at 3-1. Ravens are in trouble. Bengals are in trouble. How much has that start and every other thing going on in this division changed your level of expectation for what this team is capable of? Or has it not changed it one bit? 412-928-9370. Be right back. Again, quick break and then a long commercial-free segment on the PM team.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.